Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your reaction pod after the third round of the Charles Schwab Challenge. To say this is a stacked leaderboard would be an absolute understatement. So let's jump into this because there's a lot of guys to go through. Let me bring in the crew for this evening. It's Mark Immelman on the scene. Hey, Mark.
Hello, Rick and Kyle. How you boys doing?
Good. KP also in town taking a swig of, what was that, Diet Coke, KP? I didn't see it.
Sparkle water.
Sparkle water. Okay. I didn't know if you were a dad life. No,
it's the dad life. I'm over here. Listen, I'm over here. I'm changing diapers in between tweeting out Spieth stats. I'm helping out. I mean, it's a circus over here. And I'm probably not faring as well as I think that I am, but we're hanging on. It's like a Spieth round. We're just hanging on.
Do you find anything in common with dirty diapers and Spieth stats? too similar, I think.
Do we even need to get to anybody else? Can we just go Spieth for an hour?
Sure, we can. But first, let's do this. Mark, you are live on the scene. I haven't talked to you since the event started. I don't even know how to put this. I mean, we waited 91 days for golf to come back. And when I look at a leaderboard that is jam-packed with the world's biggest stars, I think, hey, maybe this was worth the wait.
Well, golf's come through, hasn't it? I mean, you look at the golf course, Colonial. It's an iconic venue, Ben Hogan's Alley. That makes it super special. The weather has been off the charts. I wish there was some more wind. I mean, you come to West Texas and that defines golf. And we've had 3 Chamber of Commerce days thus far, and the wind has been light. The golf course has been great. And the show horses have shown up and they're showing out. And the fans, I'm sure, what's not to love about what's happening right now? I thought the broadcast was cool. You've got all these great golfers in contention there, and you've got a pretty esteemed prize on offer. And Nick Faldo, to me, said it best. He goes, as a player, you remember major championships and big events. I mean, imagine being the winner of the first event after the 90-day COVID pandemic lockdown. Yeah, I mean, that is, I hate to call it a feather in the cap, but that's one of those things that you certainly will remember. And I think he said it very well.
Mark, you're out there. Did you walk by the, there's a statue of Hogan out there with the cap on?
I got a picture with a mask on it.
Do you think that, was there a mask on it?
The one day there was, yeah. There
Do you think
Charles Schwab yellow mask on it?
Do you think Bryson thinks that statue's for him with the hat?
I haven't looked at your Twitter feed. Have you tweeted that one just yet?
No, I was saving that for Sunday. So don't spoil it.
Okay, well, you're giving it up right now. Look, it's a cool thing. It's the kind of thing whenever someone goes to Colonial, you go and look, and it's this huge statue, and it's on a pedestal, and there's plaques all the way around. It's giving his name. And then when he won the Sports Illustrated Athlete of the Year or whatever, and his major championships, it really is pretty cool. And inside the clubhouse, there's the Hogan room that's got all of his trophies and his US Open medals. And the place reeks of history. And when you walk the fairways, it's a spiritual kind of an experience. It's almost like going to St. Andrews or to Augusta National or one of those sorts of places. And quickly along those lines, Tuesday's practice round, I went out to follow Spieth. I think I might have said this to you guys. You guys know this. And he was playing alongside Franklin Korpening. And every day there's this red shoulder hawk that flies over that horrible horseshoe there, those 3 holes, 3, 4, and 5. And whenever the thing flew over, Korpening would go, there's the hawk, there's Hogan. And you get the feeling that he's still around there, and it's so cool.
Wow. That is pretty cool. Kyle tests out his material on us first, and if it qualifies, then he tweets it out the next day. Kyle, the leader here It's Xander Schauffele, who is 13 under par, one shot clear of five or six guys at 12 under, guys breathing down his neck at 11 and 10. Schauffele's been in the top 20 of the world rankings dating back to the 2018 BMW Championship after that week. So we're talking, you know, we're going on almost 2 years of him being a top 20 player. But I feel like if you asked a lot of people to name the top 10, top 20, top 30 players in the world, it feels like Xander would get omitted quite a bit.
He would, which is, I don't know. Like, is that weird? Is it?
I don't know.
I think it's weird that you take somebody like him. If he was, I don't know. Maybe it's, I really struggle with this because I've thought about it a lot. Is it a personality thing? Is it, you know, we've had guys like him who have won that much at that age before, and we kind of freak out about them. You know, the Jordan Spieths, the even Patrick Reed, who has kind of won at the same type of clip, just off the top of my head, as Xander. He's a much bigger personality and kind of caricature within the game, and he was even before he won his major championship, even before he won at the Masters. Xander just gets. He gets so lost in this mix of stars and superstars. And I guess it's a personality deal. I mean, I saw Mark's interview with him after the round on CBS, and he's just kind of, he almost seems like just put out by having to like answer questions and stuff. I don't know if that's the feeling that, I don't know. Maybe that's just a bad judgment from watching on television, but He doesn't always seem like he like really wants to be there, which I don't know. I think people don't really look at that, and it's not very compelling, I don't think.
He's very insightful, and off camera, he's a bit of a jokester. I mean, when like Justin Thomas, we've got this strange interview set up there where the players are on one side of the stanchion, and then you've got all the still cams, and then it's myself and Todd Lewis and a few of the PGA Tour media officials asking questions. And so it's an odd environment. And so at one stage, Justin Thomas was answering questions from the Golf Channel, and I had Xander, and there was someone else down the way. I can't recall who it was. And the banter between Justin Thomas and Xander was like two buddies. And you could see there was back and forth between them. But then when the light goes on Xander, he's just like all business. It's kind of like his personality is how he plays the game. It's sort of no frills. There's not a lot of dynamics, but all of a sudden you add the thing up at the end of the day and he shot 66 or whatever he did today. So, I mean, the way he played today, it was one of those days where I'm watching him and it's like, you know, you're with McIlroy who makes it look dynamite, even though he's playing badly. And Xander, I look at the stats at the end of the day and he's leading the field in strokes gained tee through green.
There we go, Mark.
Yeah, well, I mean, Kyle, I'm getting you rubbing off him. But just by the eye test, you know, he was hitting the ball flush. I think of one tee shot where he basically missed his mark. But there was no frills about him. He put it together very soundly. And he just sort of charts his way around the golf course. And at Hogan's Alley, I dare say, and you're going to pick me on this, Kyle, because I've compared Morikawa to Tiger.
And Hogan.
Well, Xander plays the game like Ben Hogan. Doesn't say very much.
There we go.
he doesn't say very much. He hits the ball flush. If there's a weakness in the game, it's not very much a weakness, but he doesn't putt as well. So there are similarities, and there's just not a lot of noise around him. So I think he hasn't been noticed because he's not the guy who's going to have the hot take on social media, or he's not going on the SB2K vacation to Baker's Bay or something like that. He's just all about golf.
Yeah, I texted you this, Mark, during the broadcast.
I couldn't get back to you, bro.
Well, I was trying to get your phone to go off on national television, which would have been awesome. But is Xander's swing, I think, doesn't get talked about enough. It's really good. I don't know if I would put it in my top, I don't know, five or eight swings on tour, but just the rhythm of it. And this goes back for me with the JT thing, like he's just so well-rounded. Like those are, I think Xander is kind of the lesser JT. JT's a better player, but in terms of the way they put it together, and Mark said it, I mean, first in strokes, you look at the tee to green stuff this week, Rick, and the top 10, it's like they're all in the top 15 on the leaderboard. I mean, it's crazy how it's looked so far this week.
I tell you what, his golf swing, I wish I had seen your text because it was so appropriate. Xander Schauffele's golf swing is very efficient. It's highly dynamic. It's repetitive, which for me is a benchmark for measuring golf swings. And he moves the ball out there sneaky long, to use a golfing term, because he's alongside McIlroy, who hits these highs or bombs. And Xander hits a flatter, more penetrating flight. And there wasn't much difference between the two of them. And he moves it easily, he swings efficiently, the rhythm is tremendous. And he hit a shot on 10 today that I feel like he'll look back on, because it was the turning point of the round. Because up until then, he was okay. It just was nothing really dynamic happening. But 10, he hits this beautiful little carved 8-iron into a tight right flag, basically almost holds the thing. But from 163, he's gone with an 8-iron, and there's a breeze down, sort of down over his left shoulder. He could have really stepped on 9 if he wanted there. But to be able to take speed off the thing, to flat the golf ball in there, that speaks to a guy who's got oodles of control and a whole bunch of confidence in what he does.
Yeah, he's got everything in the repertoire. Kyle, another guy with everything in the repertoire is Gary Woodland, who, I mean, we've been on HQ together a ton. I'm not sure we've spent any oxygen on Gary Woodland, who is now sneaky T2, one shot back. He's shot a 65, 67, 66. And if you want to talk about the strokes gained numbers, Kyle, the way that Gary's doing it is not necessarily the way that we normally see. Yes, he's going bonkers on approach over 7 strokes gained, but he's actually losing one shot off the tee this week. But there he is, right in contention, trying to I don't know. I feel like wouldn't it be a little poetic if Gary runs down Xander the way that Xander ran down Gary at Tournament of Champions?
Yeah, that's a great call. I forgot that. I remember that Xander did it, but I forgot that Woodland was up like 3 or 4 going into that final round.
Yeah,
and Xander shoots a 61 or 62, whatever it was, to run him down. To prove the point that I was making and that you're making right here, Rick, it's the top 10 on the from tee to green this week so far. Number 1, Xander. Then you go Morikawa, Bryson, Rory, Abraham Anser, Harold Varner, Corey Connors, team no putt, Justin Thomas, Woodland's 9th, and then Scottie Scheffler's 10th. I mean, that's basically the leaderboard. And, you know, I think what that means is it's going to come down to like just who has the best day putting on Sunday, right? And who gets hot putting. And, you know, from that standpoint, it's I think we talk about this stuff in terms of, oh, could he close it out? Did he choke? Whatever. And it's like, I don't know, man, like 7 of these guys are basically tied, and it's going to come down to who putts, like gets a few to drop on Sunday. I think we sort of lose that in the middle of kind of talking about the way that guys close out tournaments, especially when it's really tight at the top like this.
Hey, you guys, in respect to Woodland now, speak of strokes gained. Can we talk about pounds lost?
He looks good.
Gee whiz. I had him, I think it was in the second round of Friday afternoon, and we're walking down 17 and he eases over. We social distance, don't worry. And he's like, hey man, how are you? And I said, man, homeschooling killed me. And he goes, well, we've got a couple of youngsters in the house and it was kind of crazy. So, you know, nice to get back out here and play. And so I said, but I'm like, you're looking incredible. What have you done? And he said, you know, just, I've been working out really hard, but it's just diet and stuff. And he has shed a lot. I mean, it's like 15 pounds and stuff. And he looks lean. I asked him, because the big concern always is if you pick up weight or if you lose weight, you know, what's it doing for the feel and the timing of the golf swing? So I was like, how about the golf swing? And he goes, no, man, feeling absolutely fine. And he looks lean. And I think, you know, running into this big run of golf we've got upcoming, shedding those few extra pounds, getting a touch stronger, I think is going to stand him in good stead for this long haul. Because, I mean, if we've got, you know, it's been hot as heck this week. Next week in South Carolina is going to be hot and humid. And then you travel up to the Northeast and Connecticut, it'll be humid up there. So you've got the summertime run of golf with a lot of events. I think being lighter is a masterstroke. I really do.
I agree with the swing part too. I was watching him on Thursday on PGA Tour Live and his rhythm was silky. I mean, it always is, but it was just so, I mean, it was really, really good. So I'm not super surprised that he's played really well this week.
All right, gentlemen, let's get to it. It's time. The main event. We've had a couple of undercard fights. We'll get to the main event here. It's Jordan Spieth, who Okay, do you guys remember the old Nike commercial that was like the Michael Vick experience, and it was like a amusement park ride where it made you like Michael Vick, and he was, you know, running around and jumping over everybody? I feel like we got the full Jordan Spieth experience today, which is he looked great at times, he looked terrible at times, he rolled in like a 50-footer, he tried to convince Greller to let him like hit a hero shot from underneath a tree. It was just like everything I could have ever imagined from Jordan Spieth we got today. Kyle, this, as we've talked about for 2.5 years or 3 years, this would be his first win since the 2017 Open Championship. It got a little rockier today, but still with a 2-under 68. How are we feeling about his chances tomorrow?
I feel just electrified by whatever is going to happen tomorrow. I have no idea what it is. Anything between 65 and 85 is in play. Rick, I always go back to 16 Masters Saturday, Rory and Spieth final pairing, final game, and Rory shoots, it was windy, it was nasty that day, it was cold and windy. Rory shoots 76, I think.
77.
Spieth shoots 71 or 70. And at one point, Rory turned around to his caddy at the time, who was, help me out, Mark, J.P. Fitzgerald. And I can't do the accent. My buddy Kevin Van Valkenburg, we say this to each other all the time about Spieth. He'll do the accent. He said, "How the hell is he 3-under?" This was on the second nine at Augusta on Saturday in just this nasty weather. And that's the story of Spieth's career. I mean, CBS comes on the air. Spieth is in between two trees, and it says co-leader at the top right. I mean, that's that's his career in a screenshot. And that was the stat that I looked this up, because it felt like he was all over the place on the front nine on Saturday, and that he was in the middle of the fairway every time on the back nine, and yet his scores would have told you different, which is just so apropos. I looked it up, Rick. He hit more greens in regulation from 195 or farther out than he did from 140 and in. And he had over twice as many opportunities from 140 or in, which is just, that tells you everything you need to know about the way Spieth is playing this week.
It's really incredible. And you made a good point that I want to get Mark's take on here, because the back nine that Jordan Spieth had, which is basically he makes one bogey on the back, that's it, eight pars. I thought a lot of guys kind of hit the wall coming in, Mark. Was it freshening out there? Like, was it getting more difficult? Was the 95 whatever degree heat wearing on these guys? I thought a lot of guys hit a wall coming in.
Yeah, I think it was a little of everything. The wind was variable, and between those hardwoods that flank that fairway, the fairways, it can move around a bit, and so you can set up and try and pick a shot, and all of a sudden the wind may flip on you. But it was just enough to be bothersome. But it wasn't gusty and real nasty. So if you were missing, it was a major misjudgment or a misstrike, or you're playing from the rough, because you're playing to very receptive targets still. The rest of the golf course was browning out and firming up, but they've got to keep the green spritz to just, you know, keep the bent grass alive. So you were always going to see that this week, where the morning guys would go kind of crazy. We saw Reed do that with 63. And then the afternoon crowd, things will level out a little bit. And if you shoot 3-4 under par, I think it's a solid round, because there's only 2 par 5s. But what Jordan did on the backside, look, the closer you get to the finish line, the more the pressure starts to ramp up. And pressure exposes pipes, and it exposes golf swings. And I looked through the numbers. I did my Kyle Porter, and I looked through the statistics. And the ball striking stats have gotten progressively worse. And I made the comment to, I think, Greg yesterday and to Dottie Pepper this morning. I'm like, it's been a good thing for Jordan Spieth that uncomfortable wind in out the left, the westerly, hasn't been blowing. But then when you're in a situation like on number 5 today, which is one of the more daunting tee shots in the game, you've got the Trinity River down the right, but out of bounds down the left, and the hole peels to the right-hand side. And that fairway is as narrow as a gnat's rear end. And Jordan gets up there and hits the quick left. And now I want to see what happens tomorrow on that hole. And I want to see what happens tomorrow on a hole like, you know, 11, the par 5, which is pinched in the landing area as well. it's 630 yards, and with the easterly blowing, it's into the breeze. So if you miss the fairway, you're pitching out-ish, and you're going to have an approach shot from like 170-plus perhaps. And that happened again with him today. So you know, he's got the gumption, and he's got the know-how, and he's got the just that intangible to get by all of this stuff. I mean, he makes the odd putt, he chips the thing in, he does that sort of stuff like he has been doing. But he's going to have to strike the ball better tomorrow if he wants to remain a factor.
Ray, did you see the conversation between him and Kreller on the front?
Yeah, well, where they were in the trees there, and he wanted to hit that shot out.
Yeah, and he said, yeah. I think he said, I have this shot. And Kreller goes, yeah. I know you have this shot, but now is not the time.
Right. You said that?
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, it was so good.
They got that on the audio. So to put Mark's comments into perspective, Spieth lost 2.5 shots on approach today, by far the worst round of the tournament and the of his tournament.
We got a camera on Kyle right now.
And the third worst approach round of the day. Now, he can do something. This is a segue, Kyle, into the next guy I want to talk through. In the last 60 years, only three players have won 12 or more times on the PGA Tour before turning 27. Jordan Spieth can do it tomorrow. Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Justin Thomas, which I think is not only a great stat, how good is Justin Thomas? Like, yeah, that's unreal.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, tell yourself that stat when Spieth had 5 wins and JT was on the Corn Ferry, right? Yeah. Because I think he turned pro a year later, right? He stayed at Bama a year long, like 2 years, where Spieth only stayed. Am I getting that right, Mark?
Say again, sorry.
I don't think JT turned pro until a year after Spieth.
I'd be lying if I gave you an answer there. So I'll go with you. I trust you.
I think that's right. And then he spent a year on the Corn Ferry. So Spieth's got a 2-year head start, and not just a 2-year head start, but like a 5 or 6 win head start. And then JT just ran him down. And I feel like that gets a little lost. I mean, not amongst us, but just broadly. I thought JT shot the quietest 66 he's ever shot today. I mean, no bogeys. I saw his interview with Mark afterward as well. And he said he was just like, he didn't have his stuff and he still shot 66. I thought that was telling. I would not be surprised if he goes shoot 65 tomorrow and that's a wrap.
Yes.
I will long remember a statement from Nick Price, who said to me that he became a major champion and the number one ranked golfer in the world when he learned to make his bad day good.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have one bad day a tournament. And if you can get out of there with minimal damage score-wise, you'll find something again. And when Justin looked at me and I was like, so this, I asked him this question before we went on air. I'm like, so how was the day? He goes, I didn't play very well, man. I was like, okay then. And Justin Thomas doesn't lurk. He now looms in people's rear view mirrors. And I think everyone knows this because, you know, he'll come out of today shooting 4 under on a blistery afternoon going, all right, I kept myself in the game. I'm 1 back or whatever I am. I like my chances tomorrow.
Yeah, he is certainly looming large. Kyle, you are correct. So Spieth played 27 events in 2013. Justin Thomas had his full schedule of 30 in 2014. So he had a year head start on him, and JT tracked him down. Colin Morikawa is the last guy I want to talk about. Mark, we'll start with you because I think we get lost so much in the cut streak. You know, we talk about it. We add one every single week. We say this is really great. He won the Barracuda last year. Now with an opportunity to solidify himself as the best young player on tour with Sungjae. I mean, obviously Victor Hovland's there. Obviously, Matthew Wolff is there. But this would be a really massive win in a huge field for someone like Colin Morikawa.
Well, look, he's got all the tools. We all know this. This podcast has been beating the Morikawa drum for a long time. He's come on the show. And in preparation for today's show, because I thought I'd have the penultimate group, he was going to be in the group. So I basically researched. And I went and listened to our First Cut podcast and the time he'd come on mine with me. And there were so many interesting nuggets about the golf swing and his approach to hitting greens in regulation. And how he likes to play off the middle of the greens to tight targets. And a number of the hole locations were like four from the edges today. So if you short-sighted yourself, you saw that in scoring, you couldn't quickly make bogeys, where the way he plays is just incredible. And then he has, get the story, his favorite club. And then, because I asked him, okay, do you have a favorite club or do you just always play at the middle of the greens? And he goes, he laughs. He goes, no, my 8-iron is my favorite club. And he said when he turned professional and JJ Djokovic picked up the bag, Colin always puts the 8-iron in the staff bag down by the wedges because it's a green light club. Hmm. JJ would always lift it out and put it back next to the 7-iron in the other compartment, and he'd move it back. And there was this banter back and forth. So he had told me this. So I went on the range this morning and I said to JJ, I got to see that bag. And JJ jokes, he goes, well, don't touch anything. You know, we're COVID compliant over here. And lo and behold, the 8-iron is in there. And a number of the good shots he hit today, especially that one to 13, the par three, which was very tough to get to the top plateau. We saw Brassen blow it over the back. We saw Varner blow it over the back. Everyone else was coming up a little short of that ridge. 8-iron, Morikawa in there 6-7 feet, makes a birdie. This dude is not going away. Trust me, the way he strikes it, his demeanor, he's got an old head on young shoulders. He is the complete package. I'm telling you this now.
Yeah, I owe you an apology, Mark, about the last year it was earlier this year. It feels like it was 7 years ago, but talking about when you said Morikawa was what did you say? He's a better iron player than Tiger?
No, I said at his best, he's comparable with Tiger Woods.
I think that might be right. I think he's unbelievable. I think the conversation, like the Hovland Wolf Morikawa conversation. I think for now, I shouldn't say this, but I think for now it's not a conversation right now. I mean, the way he's Rick, did you see the drive he hit on 18?
Yeah, I did. He's insane.
That's
he's gaining Sung Jae-esque sort of reputation with his first cut punt.
The flight on that ball was a joke. I mean, it's DJ like, and you know, again, it's. And this is where you want to, I think he's one of the 20 best guys in the world right now. I really do. And the short game stuff, I think some of that takes years to kind of figure out your feels on that. And to, you know, you just got to work at your short game, not just putting, but your wedges and stuff in a way that you didn't in college. And I think he will figure that out. And I just think he's going to be a top 15, top 20 guy for the next 20 years. I really do.
Okay, get these two observations. First off, it's my one and then one from him. My observation of Colin Morikawa is that he knows he's good. You know, a lot of folks, they're like, okay, I'm good, but I can I compete? When I asked him on my podcast to come on, I said to him, I want to talk about greens and regulation because this is your deal. And I said to him, so talk about your iron game. And he goes, I know my iron game is good. It's always been my weapon. And so there's this belief in the iron game, which and the game as a whole, and that is a big deal. Not very many folks have that. And then secondly, when he's playing with someone who's better than him, and he admitted this to me, he goes, like, if I'm playing with someone with a really good short game, to your point, Kyle, he goes, I'll look and I'll watch them closely and I'll see what they do.
Yeah.
And that's how I trust to incorporate these things into his game. So he has a guy who's massively confident, who believes in himself, but is also wise enough to just look around and see, okay, where can I tighten things up? Or as Eric Van Rooyen says, you know, where can I polish my diamond a little bit? And so, I mean, he is just so, he's wise beyond his years, Morikawa, and he's talented.
I'm all in. All right, Rick's all in.
Yeah, I don't even have to say that. Well, we'll see if he can close one out tomorrow. We'll see him. We'll see Rory. We'll see Xander. We'll see all your favorite golfers compete at Colonial Country Club in the Charles Schwab Challenge. And you can watch it a few different ways. On your computer, oh, yeah, just go to cbssports.com. On your phone, absolutely. It's totally free. Make sure to download the CBS Sports app and you're off and running watching Big Bryson on your small screen. Who wrote this? You can also watch on Roku, Fire TV, and Apple TV through the CBS Sports app on those devices. So in other words, there is no excuse, gentlemen. Never, ever miss a chance to watch our guy, Jordan Spieth, on CBS this weekend. And with that, We're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt, and I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to, and Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th.
And we're back. Rory McIlroy. I think this has got to be a record talking about him really in depth after the break for the first time in First Cut history. Mark, you were with this group this morning. This was weird because Rory goes out and makes number one look like mini golf. I mean, he's on in two on this par five with like a 15 footer up the hill for eagle. He taps it in for birdie and I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go. This is Rory's day. He's about to just tear this place apart. And then he doesn't. He goes, you know, 6 of 14 on fairways. He hits 14 out of 18 greens, but just didn't seem like the Rory we expected.
I went out before our show, and I watched him play the first few holes. And incidentally, Matt Wallace, a European tour professional, was out there walking, watching. And he comes up to me. I'm like, God, what are you doing out of here, aren't you? And he goes, heck, a chance to watch McIlroy, the number one player in the world with no fans. He goes, I'm going to do this. And then he was talking about Rory's leg action, and that's something Matt's trying to build into his swing. So that was fascinating in itself. But during this time, McIlroy goes birdie one, he hits it through the back of the green on two after a big drive, makes four. Then the next hole hits this beautiful eight iron to about 15 feet and has this insane lip out. I mean, the golf ball turned back at him. So he nearly makes birdie there. The next hole, the par three, the fourth, hits a six iron about 20 feet above the hole. And this thing melts over the top edge of the cup. Five, he pulls a tee shot, Simon, hits an insane wedge from heavy rough over a bunker onto the green, two putts for par. Then the next hole, he bashes a drive down there, gets himself a look from about 20 feet, but doesn't convert. So right now, I mean, he could have been 2-3 under par with a little fortune. Seven, we turn back away from the clubhouse, going towards the Trinity River. The wind is sort of over the right shoulder, some. There's a bunker down the right-hand side that's about 3-10 to cover. Now, with a helping wind and ease draw, I'm thinking, all right, open up, hit driver. I've seen a few folks do it. You get yourself a chip wedge in there. He gears down to hit an iron, and he makes a sloppy-looking pass, hits it into the left trees, makes a bogey. And I feel like that was the turning point in the round. Because from there, it got a bit scrappy. He missed a tee shot wide left in the next hole, the par three, with a 7-iron. Then on a 9, he blows it right off the tee, makes par. And he just was kind of, you could see an agitated look about him. In fact, open disclosure on 10, they come to me for a Xander call, and I'm calling a shot off the monitor, which is a little late, and Rory's tapping in for par, and I exclaim something from a long ways away, but with no gallery, Rory raises up and sort of gives me the glare, and I'm like, I'm giving him the prayer, I'm so sorry, man, and he comes over and he goes, don't worry about it, it's fine. And but there was just a sense of agitation about him. And then on 11, I mean, it's 630 yards or something, and freaking smashes a drive down there. And it's a fairway middle into the greenside bunker and makes birdie. And so he looked great, and then he didn't look so great. And then he hung around there and made a couple birdies on the back nine and kept himself in the game. But I guess long-winded to say, there's no problem here, because apart from two poor swings on 7 and 8, this dude's probably shooting 66 or lower. So I still feel like he's going to be a factor tomorrow, Kyle.
How baller is it that you've got pros following you around?
And I'm talking over their hand. I mean, it's the worst thing. That is the worst thing as an on-course announcer, to be called out by someone. And I was about 60 yards away, but with no gallery and then no ambient sound, this sort of stuff happens.
You should have pointed at Matt Wallace and said, hey, he did it.
No, he had left by then. He was going to practice.
I just think you got pros following you around when you're the number one player in the world. That's unbelievable. I mean, I agree with Mark. I think the problem for Rory is, I just think his third rounds are so telling. Like, if he's out in the lead on Sunday, it's probably over. But if he's fighting from behind, I feel like he'll do the thing where he'll shoot 31 on the front. Everybody will get excited and the Twitter will be just rocking, and then he'll shoot 35 on the back and he won't win. Like, that's just sort of how tournaments like this go for him. And I don't have the stats to back this up, but it just seems like he's such a, like, if he's in the lead on Saturday night by 2 or 3, like, that's kind of over, right? Like, we wouldn't even be talking about anything else. We'd just be talking about him winning. And so I think that's where the third rounds for him are so vital, so important to get into that spot. And if he's not, and Rick and I talked about this on HQ, there's just so many guys to leapfrog and so many really good guys. So I think Rory has to shoot, like, I don't know, 64 on Sunday to go win, probably.
I think I haven't really looked at the scoreboard, but he's six groups behind the final group. He tees off an hour before the final twosome tomorrow. And someone pointed out to me that this is kind of the anniversary of that final round. What did he shoot in Canada to win? He was like 61 or something crazy, right?
But wasn't he leading?
I don't know. I was busy at the Arnold Palmer Cup. I just remember turning on the television and yes, Rory just cantering to victory. I'm going to make the hot take here. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes out and does another like 63 like he did, and way out in front of folks. And yes, then us pundits can go, well, yeah, with the lead, he's kind of, you know, when he's Saturday, he's struggling, but then you give him a free swinging day, he's going to be better. Look, either way, if you're making a few birdies quickly and your name's up the leaderboard, the pressure ramps up. I don't care who you are. And so he's still going to close the thing out. And I wouldn't be surprised if he goes low tomorrow.
Did you see who he's paired with?
No, who's that?
Rick saw it.
He's Bryson. He's with Bryson.
Yeah, Bryson's going to be swinging out of his mind.
Yeah, those two are going to put on a show tomorrow. KP, would you like to win $1,000?
Yes, I need some more diapers. I need help.
What does that buy you? How many diapers does that buy you?
It's a lot. It's a lot of diapers.
Okay. I have no idea how much diapers cost. Okay. $1,000 gets you a lot of diapers, and you don't even have to put up any of your own money. That seems even better. That's where CBS Sports has you covered with our very own golf prop game, available at cbssports.com/golfprops. That is cbssports.com/golfprops. In fact, I make the questions. So if you're listening to the First Cut, you're getting the inside scoop, and we will have questions after every single round, so you have more than one opportunity to win that diaper cash every single week. Terms and conditions obviously apply. Here's one of the props for tomorrow, gentlemen. We just jived on Rory McIlroy for a few minutes. The line for his score tomorrow is 66.5. Mark Immelman, Will Rory McIlroy shoot over 66 and a half or under 66 and a half?
Well, okay, just to put it all into perspective before I make the answer here, I was asked this question on your prop bet last night, and it was 67 and a half Jordan Spieth. And I was back and forth and back and forth. And on one shoulder, I've got my sanity, and the other shoulder, I've got Kyle Porter's shadow. And I'm like, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go under. And I saw he didn't go under. So, but I'm going low. I'm taking the under on McIlroy.
KP, he's probably, if he wants to win, he's going to have to go under this. Does he have it in him?
Yeah, I think he goes 65 and loses by two. Another top five. When do you have to turn this question in? This is a really good one.
So I give 3 by noon Eastern that we can promote 3 for the next day. And then I wait as long as possible, usually an hour after the round, so that I can get the guys who are paired together. They're very well, you know, there's a lot of thought and energy put into them. So as late as possible.
Here's an idea for you. Now that you know the groupings and Bryson's alongside McIlroy, how many times does Bryson drive it past Rory tomorrow?
There you go. That would have been a good one. I've already turned them in, but that would have been a good one for next time. All right, let's go through these quickly. And Bryson is the man there that you just mentioned, Mark. He is, I believe, the only guy in like the top 27 or something crazy of this field that hasn't gained at least one stroke putting, which the way that we talk about this, that's usually a good sign for him. Talk to me about Bryson's day and kind of what you expect from him tomorrow and moving forward.
You know what? I'm not sure what to expect because I didn't see much of his round. I know he got off to a scrappy start with a bogey on the first, but the way he's been playing around here, he's figured it out, and he's figured out what his keys are, and he's figured out a way to play this golf course, and he's being aggressive off the tee, and he's leaving himself. I mean, I heard, I think it was Ian Baker Finch that made the point in a break to us, that on par fours in round 3, or maybe for the tournament, maybe it was Nick Fowler, he said his average approach shot was coming from about 118 yards. Now, that is just crazy. And for Bryson DeChambeau, that's probably a tickle with a sand wedge or something like that. And with receptive greens, it should be open season, correct? But something happened today, and he just, maybe he didn't put in as many fairways. I haven't seen statistics, but he wasn't able to take advantage like he had been in rounds 1, 2, and 3. But I still feel like you keep on putting yourself into position off the tee like he is, because he was leading the field in strokes gained off the tee coming into this third round. You're going to have a number of wedges in your hand. And so if you do that, the odds are on your side. And then you've just got to make a few putts. And that putting statistic to me is sometimes skewed, because you can hit it to 20 feet and strokes gain will say, okay, you gain a quarter of a stroke or whatever. But if you're putting up and over a slope from 20 feet, it's not the same as something uphill right to left from 20 feet.
Yeah.
So I think distance control still is a big deal. And especially here at this place, Colonial, and next week, certainly at Hilton Head. And so if he wants to contend off these tee shots, he has to be able to flight these wedges the correct distance. And if he does so, then he will give himself easier putts, which will then kick themselves on to probably more makes.
We talked today about, Rick and I talked today on HQ about how Bryson's kind of like a boxer, like a heavyweight, where if he knocks you out early, you're done. But if you take him like 12 rounds, he might just start getting really tired at the end. Yeah. in the Texas heat. I think that might be what's happening here. I think he's going to get worn down. He's going to get weighed down by all these protein shakes by Sunday.
Well, think about it like this. Okay. Like, you talk about Xander, for argument's sake. The guy doesn't break a sweat when he swings a golf club just because of the leverage and the dynamics in his golf swing. You watch Bryson with a driver, and it's an effort. And this dude is hard, okay? And so I'm sure it's wearing him out. But you don't do all the lat pull downs and stuff that he's doing if you're not in some cardiovascular shape. The point that I found interesting too was someone had talked about Woodland, and they said, well, with him being lighter, that puts less stress in the joints. Because I don't care what athlete you are, walking 72 holes is taxing on the body. And you know, if you're bigger and you're heavier, that's load that's put on the joints, like the knees and the ankles and stuff like that. So, you know, ice baths and inflammation and stuff become a thing. So it's, you know, he's hitting the ball hard, but it's hard work right now.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to see how he reacts tomorrow if it is a wearing down type of situation. All right, here's a prop special for you, KP.
Okay.
I just made this one up on the fly.
Okay.
That grouping, Bryson and Rory, I'll set the line at 4 strokes gained off the tee, over or under. And I'll tell you, as of right now, through 3 rounds, they've gained a combined like 9.5, which is crazy.
I'll take the over, and I'll tell you why I take it. Because the guys behind the golf course are going to firm up in the afternoon. You'll hit it hard, and you'll get balls trundling into the rough sun. So I think with them out a bit earlier, they might have a more receptive place, so you can go a bit more aggressively. So I'll take over.
Yeah, I'll go over too. I think the body language between those two is going to be hilarious, because Bryson's going to be out there like, look at me, Rory. Like I'm really long too, and Rory's going to be like, whatever, bro. Like I don't care.
Yeah. All right, quickly on two guys here as we start to wrap. Patrick Reed goes out and shoots a 63. Mark, he did this. He was basically done by the time any of these leaders teed off. Is that a testament? I'm sure it's a testament to what great play it was. But how different was the course in the morning versus in the afternoon?
Every day it's been different, because in the morning when you know, there just seems to be more dew out there. The greens are a little smoother, because with bent grass, they get chewed up, and certain guys wear spikes and soft spikes, and they've got to be kept moist. Okay. So if you're wearing soft spikes by the end of the day, there's indentations and stuff around the green. I don't care how great the greens are. So if you get out there early and you're hitting the ball well, the right distance, and you're putting the ball in play, you can take advantage. And that's exactly what he did. That's why we've seen the proliferation of low scores come from the morning waves this week. And it's just because of the fact that the greens with traffic later in the day, because they're just a little moist, are going to get chewed up a bit more.
Patrick Reed's last handful of high finishes, Kyle: third infamously at the Hero World Challenge, second at the Tournament of Champions, sixth at the Farmers. He won in Mexico, 15th at the Arnold Palmer. Those are really good fields. Like, this guy is, whether you like him or not, finds a way to the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, there's a proliferation of 63s when nobody's out there watching him either. No cameras, no spectators.
Nobody to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, exactly. No, he really has been playing really good golf. And it gets buried because of just all the theatrics and all the nonsense. But he's been really good in 2020. It's kind of like Bryson in a lot of ways, where and it's funny that those two were going at it in Mexico. There's all this other stuff going on, and we forget how great they're playing golf.
Yeah, it's really incredible. Okay, here's a name that I would argue, we'll have to send producer Jacob through the archives. We may have never talked about Daniel Berger on this podcast, but we are doing it right now, gentlemen. Because he has now got 27 consecutive rounds of par or better. It is, of course, the longest active streak on tour. He's going to need to basically double that mark if he wants to chase down a record held by Tiger Woods of 52 consecutive rounds. That's insane. 67 today for Berger. Like, how hard is it to do this 27 times in a row?
That is a crazy statistic, and I'm so happy for him, because this is a guy who came out, he was part of that 2011 class, the Thomases and the Spieths and all these sorts of people. And he was sort of the overlooked one, and he had the funky swing. And the first time I watched him play was at the Honda Classic at Champions down there in South Florida. And he just flushed it. And I looked at this going, wow, hit the same shot all the time. And then he wins in Memphis twice, and you've got to strike it around that place, Southwind. And then he has that horrid wrist injury and just battled and battled and battled. And, he came back, and now he's come back almost better. And props to Cameron McCormick, because they've hooked up together, and clearly they're onto something over there. And Daniel is playing well, and he plays his game. And he's the sort of guy who he's a tough competitor. I mean, he's played in the President's Cup, so he has been a leading player in the world. So it's nice to see him back in good form, and it's nice to see him healthy, and obviously nice to see him playing well.
He was one of the, I think there was a dozen guys before the week started who gained strokes in all 4 major categories this season. I believe he was one of those 12. Kyle, now ranked number 107th in the world. If he keeps playing like this, you're going to see his name in a lot of these WGCs when he gets down into 40-ish, right? I mean, well, I don't know what his ceiling is at this point, but really impressive stuff.
Yeah, it has been. He would not, if you would have told me, hey, pick somebody off that 17 President's Cup team to that's going to shoot 27 rounds. What is it? 27 consecutive rounds under par.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have picked him. But yeah, he kind of wandered there for a little bit. It might have been injury related, but hey, he was your sleeper this week, right?
He was. Yes. We went on HQ and talked 66-1, Daniel Berger.
Big time.
Hey, one of those WGCs you talk about is being played at Memphis. Okay.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, get him in that field.
I can tell you.
Daniel Berger's happy hunting ground over there.
I can tell you all about Memphis.
Yeah, we know. We don't have time for that. all right, gentlemen. Let's wrap with this. We've got to make our picks for tomorrow. I will start. I've said Justin Rose every single time. I feel corny changing it now, right? I can't change it now. The guy's three shots off the lead, right?
That yeah, would be just I can't ride it out.
Yeah, all right. I'll just take Justin Rose. Kyle, do I have to ask who you think's going to win tomorrow?
Well, I'm actually going JT. Do you think that Spieth will ask Morikawa for swing tips before or after the turn?
Definitely before. Will he ask for swing tips before or after he asks for his autograph?
I love the way how Carl glosses over the "I'm not picking Spieth, I'm going with JT" thing. I mean, that was actually pretty casual and nonchalant there. Carl.
JT's historically good. I mean, I love Spieth, but JT's the man.
JT's 5-1. Justin Rose 22-1. I am scared. I'm not scared. I think it would be cool. I think Justin Thomas can absolutely run just snap off and win this thing. Mark Immelman, who you got? One round to go.
Who have I been saying for the last 6 weeks?
Colin Morikawa.
Yeah, I'm staying there. I'm not going anywhere.
All right. He's 7.5-1 on William Hill. They're live right now. You can go get those numbers. And we'll finish with this thought, because I've got one more prop question for you. What will the margin of victory be? Your options, 3 or more, 2, 1, or a playoff. Mark, we'll start with you, because you've been like historically good at calling these. You called a 3-way playoff one time. Like an insane thing to say. But
I was sucking stuff out of my thumb there. No, I'm going to be romantic here. You know me. And Matthew Wolf buried a 30-footer on Morikawa in Minneapolis last year to get the win.
Yep.
Morikawa makes a putt down the hill on the last, a la Kevin Na, to win by one.
All right, I'm going to go with a playoff because I want more golf. Kyle Porter, what do you got?
JT by 2 over Rory and Morikawa.
Dang, he's going to shoot something really, really low tomorrow then, according to you.
JT?
It. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. That'll do it for the round 3 reaction pod for the Charles Schwab Challenge. Let me thank Mark Immelman. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Mark_Immelman. Let me thank Kyle Porter. You can find him at Kyle Porter CBS. Let me thank producer Jacob. Thanks, producer Jacob. I'm Rick Gaiman at Rick Run Good. We'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.